Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, you just see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other. We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for people.
Look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Yeah, there it is. We're going to work it out, everybody. That's Willie Hutch. That's going to work it out. That's from the Mac of all movies. Can you get to that, my love? That's from a different movie, but that's what it makes me think about. Anyway, Citizen Payne, Eric Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. It's Tuesday. Tuesday because it's a little bit easier for us to get some of our peoples to call in and talk with us in this schedule. And I'm Citizen Payne. Like I said, you're you. And you call us live on a Tuesday. All these episodes, by the way, can be archived or are archived. Or, you know, they're part of the your Yeah, that was really weird, everybody. Sorry about that. I don't know what's going on here. Maybe, I don't know, we're having issues here. Let me see if other guests are in here. Hey, Congressman, you there? Sounds like you're there. All right.
Yeah, we had a little blackout there.
Yeah, I know. Got a little problem going on there, but I think I might have had too many little windows or things open here. Let me bring the fellas in so we could just jump right into conversation here. Wayne Gilman I'm bringing in, and Byron Saunders. You guys' mics are open now. Gentlemen, say hello to the congressman. Congressman, say hello to our co-hosts, my co-hosts, Byron Saunders and Wayne Gilman. And I don't know what that noise is somebody got going on, but please, we can hear you loud and clear. Fellas,
good evening,
happening?
Congressman. Oh,
good evening, Congressman and gentlemen.
How are you? B and W, Byron and Wayne.
There we go. Sorry. Now I'm here in D.C., Congressman. Are you back in your district? Or are you? Yes, I live here in D.C.
Oh, I'm in the district, my brother.
Well, see, I kind of felt your presence. I knew there was a rock on the Capitol Hill. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
So are you guys? You guys have already voted on this package now. Congressman, come back to you. What's the situation there?
We're voting now, so everybody will be getting their check soon. So y'all stop sweating me.
Don't put it like this. We got to sweat you for the constituents.
I know. That's what I'm talking to the constituents. Stop sweating me.
All right.
As soon as
well,
as they say, hey, as they say in the Caribbean, soon come.
Yes,
you know, ma'am.
You might want to put it another way. Some people, they might be like, it's easy for you to say. So the process is because, you know, they said comes back to you guys. You guys vote real quick, right? And then you send it right over to the White House. What's been reported on the news is that is that, you know, it's, you guys have it, and it should be, the president should be able to have it on his desk by tomorrow, something like that,
yeah,
right?
We'll finish with it tomorrow. But we actually just got done. I just cast my last vote of the night just now, as we speak. I'm coming off the floor,
mm-hmm,
of the House. So they had a motion to recommit, which they always do. And
which means, what does that mean? And they, I assume, is the other side of the Republicans.
The loyal insurrectors.
That's what you're calling them?
I call them loyal insurrectors. No. That's what I just said just now. But I refer to them as the treasonous insurrectors.
Ah, I see.
I get both of them in there. Treasonous insurrectors.
I hear you.
So
go ahead with the description of.
Yeah, the motion to recommit is when the other side objects to the bill and wants to amend it. But it's just a procedural thing. Nobody, you know, they don't pass. So it's just a procedural matter to get the vote, to put it on record that they were against it, and then we vote on final passage. So
a lot of the stuff that they're doing is to get on the record, or is it just to slow up stuff? You know, I mean, the whole, like, they're talking about doing away with the filibuster. Hopefully they'll be able to do away with it. But do you think it's because they want to just throw a wrench in stuff, or is it that fact that they want to get on the record for future?
Well, no, the motion to recommit is to get on the record, because when we were in the when we were in the minority, we would do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a procedural thing that goes with almost every vote. But when they want to throw the wrench in things, and they'll ask to adjourn for the evening, and so then you got to have a vote on adjourning. So then you got to go through that process. Then they'll come back and have something else wacky that they'll want parliamentary inquiries. And they'll do that for a little while, and then they'll ask to adjourn again. So then we got to go through the vote again. So they really aren't, you know, being obstructionist tonight. You know, that's just normal procedure to the motion to recommit.
So
we actually looked at doing away with the motion to recommit, but you know, the Republicans started whining about, you know, the taking away their only voice that they have to register their, you know, their objection to a bill, and you're really stifling, you know, the minority. And I tend to agree with them, because, you know, one day, folks, we're going to be back in the minority. And so,
oh no,
remove something.
Oh no.
Yeah, I mean, eventually. I don't mean anytime soon, but it's inevitable. We won't be the majority. So remove something now that, you know, in the future we might need. That's like, even with the filibuster, I'm not big on this, you know, getting rid of the filibuster, because the shoe's going to be on the other foot one day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And they are talking about, and I'm sure, and maybe one of you guys want to jump in. You're probably familiar with Joe Manchin's the suggestion that has been floated, like, this new guy, Norm Ornstein, I believe, a guy who wrote an article saying what might be a solution to the filibusters is requiring 40 members to sign off that want to talk about it and slow down the works. And so, in essence, making it harder for people to actually partake and let them know that this is, you really got to want to do this if you want a filibuster. So making the requirements more difficult, thus making the people rethink, is this something that we're really worth doing? And I don't know.
Well, you know, plus, you know, the filibuster has been modified over time, and they don't have the same requirements they used to. So, but we're talking about, fine, you want the filibuster? We're going to go back to the old filibuster, where you're going to have to keep your behind on the floor. Excuse my language. Keep yourself on the floor. I get too loose with y'all. You know, I like talking like I'm.
Yeah.
At home. I have to say congressional. I have to stay congressional. So
yes.
to keep you on the floor, and you have to stand as you speak. And
mm-hmm.
if you stop speaking or sit down, you give up the floor. So, you know, the filibuster was a very difficult thing because
right.
it was physically demanding.
Right.
But people did it. So I'm saying, I don't say, let's not give up, you know, a tool that we might need one day for the sake of being comfortable now. I don't tend to agree with those two things, you know.
Well, Byron, you probably could give us a little bit more of a historical, maybe the extreme historical version of it. I mean, you know, obviously we all know that the initial intent, like my cousin was saying, was to, you know, you had to stay there. You had the filibuster. A lot of people see Mr. Smith goes to Washington when Jimmy Stewart has to keep reading and stay on his feet. That's what he's doing. Most recently done by, I think they've done some substantial ones within the House and Senate over the last couple of years. But to me, the most famous one that comes to mind is Wendy Davis out of Texas doing her filibuster for some issues that they were trying to get done in the Texas legislature. Byron, you have some historical professorial.
Well, you know, the context, surely the context of having the 60 votes and the filibuster, in essence, giving both parties an opportunity to express their doubts for the legislation. However, what will happen when this new Republican Party is formed and it's actually split from the old Republican Party, and that so-called notion of a majority can't be reached because at the point of which the other party is so split that the Democrats stay in majority? That's what it looks like it's heading to, Congressman. And at some point, need to have it? You see?
We'll take the split. If you know that's coming, I mean, we'll take the split. That
right.
just solidifies us. I mean, that's good
news. Exactly. But see, ultimately, I think that's where we're headed. And the fear of this change of color in power, and it is obvious, there are women
right.
who are really stepping up to the plate. People of color, Native Americans, Asian Americans, who are engaging in the American ideal and the spirit of being civic-minded, are willing to take on the challenges that are being confronted right now, you know, filibustering, gerrymandering. We're feeling the strength of our numbers, and that's what democracy is supposed to do. So let us celebrate the majority. That's where we are right now. We have a majority rule.
If I might, the only thing, Congressman Payne, I'd like to find out your analysis of what is going on with the Republican Party. We see Donald Trump, he's back in New York. He's saying instead of supporting the normal financial organizations, the PACs that would support a Republican candidate, he's asking all those who support him to throw their money his way. he acts like as if he's invincible, you know, and in some instances he has been. He's managed to get past two impeachments. You know, we can't wait for the New York trials to start. But speculation is he wants to run again, and he wants to reshape the party in his own framework or blueprint. How do we get around
image.
That?
How do we what?
How would the Democrats at this point, if the Republicans are successful, because we see a lot of them announce their retirements this week, part of the old guard, you know, what would be the game plan for Democrats to counter, you know, because some of us from time to time suffer from amnesia. I don't want anyone to forget what we went through in 2020.
All we need to do is solidify what we're doing. I mean, they're going to be in disarray. That's going to be a mess for a couple mm-hmm. cycles. So, I mean, it's just a matter of us making sure that we keep ourselves together and continue to, continue to work on voter registration. You know, Stacey, done such an incredible job, and she's really shown us the roadmap for how to really actually have people involved. So it's the blueprint is there now. We just got to be
stick with it.
Yeah, and then to me, yeah, it's funny that he's asking for payments directly to him, but that's just part of the implosion of their party, right? I mean, he's with someone who somebody sent somebody to stop in a cease and desist order. I guess he did. His organization sent it to the Republican Party to stop using his image or whatever to raise money or whatever.
Right.
Whatever kind of craziness, but that works. I mean, I wouldn't think the Democrats would have to adjust anything. Just like you said, keep doing what they're doing.
Right.
And therein lies the rub, getting them to stay on the pedal to the metal. But the more disarray they are in, the more ridiculous they seem. Maybe some more reasonable-minded people that still have some parts of their mind left that can see some things.
And Eric and gentlemen, I mean, right now, Biden's approval rate is at 60.
Right.
Right.
So, which is the reason we chose him, because we know he's going to be able to cross over and have some influence on some of those moderate Republican, people. And, basically we're seeing the fruit of that now. I mean, 60%. I mean, that's not too bad.
Yeah, a considerable amount of Republicans, right? I mean, he has a considerable out of that demographic alone by itself.
You need Republicans to get to 60.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Trump
never had that.
Right.
No, not at all.
I don't think Obama had it.
Yeah, right. He was in the high 50s.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe he might have almost got close to when he first got elected when everybody was all high on it. But 60%, that's a huge number, right, from a presidential standpoint. What do you guys think about, what's your thinking, Congressman, about these states opening back up, particularly Texas at 100% and Florida 100%, no masks, 19 states getting rid of face mask mandates. It's kind of, to me, a place like Texas and Mississippi also, and we know there's some of the statistics that are the poorest people are frontline people, the ones, the hourly wage workers, are the ones that are hardest hit, lowest end of the society, economically, or black and brown people. If you do enough stuff that systematically hurts a particular group of people, then it can be drawn, the conclusion can be drawn that you do not like that group of people. And so I can only draw that conclusion from the governors of Texas and Mississippi, certainly in Texas, the way they responded during the blackout and the power outage during the winter blitz they just had there. Do you have any comments?
It's interesting that the country is reeling from the effects of that, because that pipeline, that oil pipeline, goes all the way up to Connecticut. So the prices on gasoline are going up right now. Mm-hmm. Nobody's really said anything about it. But it's all as a result of what was the shutdown of a major oil industry of this country and its pipeline that really brings fuel all the way from Louisiana and the Gulf Coast all the way up through Connecticut and Massachusetts.
Yeah.
So now that's the reflection of poor failure of government and policy in the state of Texas, and then has to have the nerve to want to increase the price of oil as it's shipping it out to the country, and they're exploiting us again, like they're exploiting their customers in Houston, who are paying, 120% more than the cost of their energy?
Yeah, that was go ahead, Chad, I'm sorry.
I was going to say that a Republican told me today that you know, that was the first thing Biden did. He got rid of those jobs, you know, with respect to the pipeline. And I tried to explain that we cannot afford, you know, to continue with the climate change on the path the previous administration was on. And,
right.
I, you know, I don't like to pay extra for gasoline or oil. But, you know, at least an effort is being made to transition some of these people who are not capable of, you know, holding on to jobs that are not really doing anything to benefit the American economy. That was
right. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a situation that is kind of, rough. You know, Texas opening back up, you know, ignorance just breeds ignorance. And the governor down there is ignorant. And they just are, I mean, to make masks a political issue is just absurd. I mean, they take everything, anything they think that Democrats or, you know, people of color or someone's telling them something to do, they just are reviled by it. Just knee-jerk, you know, reaction to, you know, overreact to, I mean, no, I'm not wearing a mask. And that's supposed to show some political pride or some freedom. I mean, are you crazy? There's an airborne disease flying around the country.
Right.
Don't you know the mask keeps it from going into your mouth and your nose? That's all. We're just trying to keep people from spreading it. I mean, it's just absurd. So, you know, they're going to go open. God bless. You know, I won't be going to Texas anytime soon.
I'm wondering if and clearly it's what Trump was trying to do when he was in office, in terms of trying to this is me speaking, in terms of trying to kind of pick and choose and play kind of favorites with the vaccine and with the support for the pandemic, you know, when he was making statements like the Democratic states are badly run and the Republican states weren't, and it was kind of playing a little bit, you know, with who he was going to help get a vaccines and get them in. And it almost seemed to me like the plan, part of the plan was like they like to bump people off since they got that whole mentality. Let's not really, you know, let's let kind of the Democratic states get sicker. Let them get sick.
Oh.
And let's
Eric,
help
he did it. Eric, he did it with more than the vaccine. He did it with everything.
Right.
Certain
right.
levels of funding was changed by who was a blue state and who wasn't.
Right.
All kinds of things. He, you know, he tried to punish Democratic states, and they got less of everything that the president was moving moving around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't matter what it was. If there was something to benefit a state or thing, it went to the red states and not the blue states.
So do you think that's what was in I'm asking you to speculate here. And I know it's been alleged that Cuomo and his administration, there was kind of the notion in their minds, and Wayne, you probably could also comment on this well since you're right in New York, that the notion was in their minds was that they didn't want the Trump administration to use some of these statistical numbers against them. That was one of the things that they were claimed was one of the reasons why they kind of rearranged the way they were reporting these numbers or whatever. Do you think that the two of those that there is are linked, that possibly?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a correlation there, but you know, I wouldn't put it past them, to be honest, but I just can't speak to that. To that point.
Now you're saying that, you know, that there was some reaction that had to be taken by perhaps some Democratic governors in lieu of the kind of a uncooperative support they were getting from the Trump administration, right? I mean, that's kind of the way in making a decision like that sounds like that would be the thinking. Obviously, they said it. Wayne, I don't know if you heard more directly news stories that reporting, or if you have some
well,
reports.
There's so much confusion coming out of Albany. I know that the nursing home scandal was something that I think he put to rest a few weeks ago with the head physician who was in charge of it, but yet it's a political football. This coupled with now the sexual harassment issue, it's all confounding. But from what I remember, it wasn't just the Democratic states alone. We have the governor's club, which Cuomo is head of, the second in command. I can't think of the governor's name in Maryland, but he too was highly critical of how things were going on with respect to Trump administration was, doling things
out.
He wants to
run for president, so that's why he was critical. He's a Republican.
Hogan.
You know, he was critical of Trump because he has aspirations. So, why he was in that group. And you know, with the whole thing with Cuomo and the nursing homes, it's not uncommon for people to skew those numbers like that. You know, the police department does it all the time. If someone gets shot in the street and they take them to the hospital and they die in the hospital, they don't count it as a homicide.
What?
Did you realize that?
No.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
If the police have a shot individual from gun violence in the street and they die in the hospital, they do not count it as a homicide.
Interesting.
So that keeps their numbers down.
So in
Cuomo,
other words, they have to be pronounced
like
on the street.
Cuomo kind of did the same thing. You know, the people died in the hospital. He didn't count it against his COVID deaths in the nursing homes. Because they're playing, they're playing loose with the definition. Well,
yeah,
they were from the nursing home, but they didn't die there.
I never knew that. I mean, all these years, I've been covering stories. I had never heard that before, but, it does make sense. It makes a lot of sense.
And see, these are the part of the things that go on that a lot of the average people, that are voters that need to be informed about certain things don't know about. And that's what, in having you on and from time to time, Congressman, we want, like I said to you before, we want to let the average person out there, we need to get busy about educating people. And I suppose this is part of our adult youth in government that we were supposed to take over. Just to let the listeners know, we were brought up, having fathers who were politically and civil rights minded and involved. At our age, we were involved in things like youth in government and Boys State, which is equivalent to Boys State. And people are probably familiar with Boys State because the movie is out now, the documentary, which basically, if it's similar to, as I remember, similar to youth in government, was taking youth and exposing them to extracurricular activities and learning about government. You usually our programs were represented by various YMCAs throughout the state. And every Y had a political, club, youth and government club, and you would come up with ideas for bills that you wanted to pass, and you had your delegation, and you would learn the rules and the workings of government and parliamentary procedure. And we did that in high school as young people. So that was something that helped a lot of people, certainly here in the state of New Jersey, the number of years we were involved, learn about government and understand it more than just what you learn in civics class in high school and junior high. And so there's go ahead.
Yeah. It helped me do the jobs I've been doing. I mean, freeholder, city councilman, and now House of Representatives are all legislative bodies. So I just took, the YMCA prepared me for my life jobs.
Right. And so people that don't understand how things work in government and society, you know, the frustration is understandable when those who have a knowledge or a little bit of knowledge and they use that to mislead people. And so, like I said, we were tasked and hoped that we would take over this program by the woman who was the founder, one of the founders, and was a kind of a mentor to us in this area. And so maybe this is the way we can give back and help people to understand about how government works and their rights and things like that from that perspective.
Yeah, there's the lack of civics in our schools these days are awful.
I was just going to go there. Not just a regional thing. And I'm certain that perhaps in some of the better school systems, maybe there may be something that's comparable to what we used to have. But that went out in the 70s. I mean, the exposure that you had, I never had growing up at home. And it was funny, I'm not looking to get off course, but that whole Oprah interview and God Save the Queen, I know my mother must have been turning in her grave because – our home was where residents originally from Trinidad and Tobago, a former British colony. And you kind of understand, I could not, as a child, juxtapose this reverence for someone who had no power, compared to what was going on in this country. And I know my parents, no disrespect, tried their best to explain
it. You talk about the forms of government?
Yeah, exactly. Because
I was just looking for the segue there, bro. Okay, that was a hard left. Okay, I caught up. Okay.
Yeah, no, I know. As I said, I didn't want to get off topic, but as you mentioned civic courses, all these things are so important. And I'm just reminded of, basically some things I used to hear early on. And it's just one of those things, especially people who are not originally and don't have the historical background, as your family has. Immigrants need to understand. I always, if I'm in contact with someone who doesn't know or is just coming here for the first time, even if they're language locked, I try to take the time to explain what is going on, because very often you come in here and you're in a vacuum and somebody tells you to vote for this one. Oh, I'm voting for Trump because, the last one didn't do anything for. I can't begin to tell. Eric, you and I and Byron, we've done shows back then when I was registering my indignation towards people in my own community because these were the things I were hearing. They didn't understand, what was at loss until after we had him as president, and then, oh, now I get it, Wayne. I see what you were talking about.
Of the immigrant island community, is that what you're referencing in particular, or just the African American?
Right.
Black
the Caribbean,
people?
I mean, I'm not going to – the Caribbean, the Latino community to a certain extent, there's a lot of division there. It's still there. We still have a lot of work to do.
Right.
Wayne, that's interesting. So I tend to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but because of the circumstance or the people in the islands didn't have the same experience as African Americans here. And, when I look at it, there's a certain amount of pride coming from those islands was absolutely devoid in the States. Although people in the Caribbean found themselves, in plantations, it was a little different than the experience in the States. And correct me if I'm wrong. So once they get here, they have a certain
arrogance. Is that the word you're looking for?
Well, arrogance, but pride. And I think there's more pride than arrogance. Some of them are arrogant, but it's more of a sense of pride because of where they come from, how they were raised, that they aren't subject to the racism that people that were born here have been subjected to and is in their mind and keeps them from moving forward in a positive manner.
Congressman, everything you just said, I was programmed that way early on as a child. It wasn't until I experienced riots in the streets of Brooklyn in the 60s. Until I got involved with the different political activities, just covering as a journalist what was going on. And I, you know, the deal is that, and yes, I have a certain amount of pride about what we've been able to accomplish, but the experience is different. You know, we could look at a prime minister in the Caribbean and someone of color, and we didn't have that until Obama came along here.
And
there are just different aspects of how slavery affected the American black when you juxtapose what was going on in the Caribbean. I hear people say that, oh, my family had slaves in Trinidad and Tobago and Barbados and Jamaica, but we never treated them like as if they were slaves. I'm just saying, can you hear yourself?
Can you understand
what you just said? You know,
that African descendants of slavery, which are usually blacks born or that are descendants of slaves, is a lot different than African descendants in the islands. I know oftentimes a lot of the islands receive their independence a little bit sooner, and you see you have black people running the societies and things like that, and just from a visual aspect. And for me, what I've noticed along the lines of what you guys are saying, that a lot of brothers and sisters I even see from the continent, there's a different perspective. I think that African descendants of slaves, some of us, have not been able to overcome or battle against the centuries of, you know, slavery, Jim Crow, being oppressed. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why we have a class of African-Americans that kind of live down to certain expectations. You know, I think it's the thing of not wanting to appear as bougie or educated or whatever, that thing that caused us to have a division. You know, and what I've noticed about black people that come from other countries that didn't have kind of that, let the weight of this constant pressure on them, is that there is that mentality to understand the glass being half full. You know, you often see people from other countries in this continent coming with the mentality of doing whatever it takes, taking those jobs that a lot of African descendants of slaves don't want to do and busting their butt until they get to that next point, right? And willing to do what they – I mean, a lot of immigrants, that's the immigrant story of a lot of people, but certainly for our discussion, we're talking about black people. And I've seen people from the islands, people from Africa, brothers and sisters come over, not all. Some have some that same attitude that kind of is unfortunately the negative attitude that has got our brothers and sisters down here. But a lot of them come and they see, I guess, because in certain places, maybe they come from worse circumstances, and they see the opportunities here and they take advantage of them, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And maybe that can be injected into the African descendants of slaves here, and it can be a rejuvenation process. You know what I mean? We can get back to, because our fathers, they're the generation, and before there are the generations of African descendants of slaves who were willing to do whatever it took to get ahead. You know what I mean? And maybe our generation child was the one, maybe we got a little bit comfortable, you know, and I'm just saying, you
but
know.
But someone inspired your father and your fathers to some kinetic energy was there within the familial line of the Paines to do what they did, to rise to the prominence that, and I'm not saying this because the two of you are the heir, but I mean, if you don't have that seed planted early on, it leads to confusion as far as I'm concerned.
Well, somebody in the family needs to have the perspective, like we often hear now, families, even young people now. I'm the first one in my family to go to college. And to me, that seems foreign because of my upbringing. Both my parents went to college. My cousin's father went to college. So to be second generation college graduates as African Americans, I didn't realize how truly a rare thing that is, or a small percentage of the whole of black people that is. And maybe my HBCU brother could speak up as opposed to the benefits of having that opportunity there too, so we can have blacks educating blacks and helping to have that broaden that, expand that class of black people. I don't know if we still got Byron, but you know what I'm saying, Wayne.
I understand exactly what you're saying, because there is this, as Charles Blow had commentated about a month ago, there is this migration back to the South. What does that really mean?
Yes.
Because we're coming back to the South not to engage in agrarian politics, but to engage in high-tech industry, movie industry, building contractors. I mean, think about it. These are professionals who are moving back down to the South. And it's ultimately changing the dynamics. Why is Georgia a primary example of how power can be taken by a community who understands the power of numbers in redistricting, in understanding the power of your one man, one vote? Because this is the dynamics of the American dream come true. And from that base, you can build middle class and continue to uplift those who are in need, who are in poverty. $15 minimum wage is really nothing. Nothing.
Right.
You know, I mean, think about it. Those corporations who got the tax break were supposed to create jobs. And I said this back in January. 46,000 jobs were created in the month of December, the final month of the quarter, where corporations are looking for their tax breaks and getting rid of inventory. How many jobs did the government create during that period? 40,000. You mean to tell me of the $1.9 trillion tax break for the month of December, corporate America can only create 6,000 jobs? That's unacceptable.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was the other guy, because Joe's numbers came out and we got 379,000. So
yes, exactly.
Joe's the man that's getting it done. And the fact that you guys, this is why I was stressing in the last show we did, Congressman, that, you know, about the checks need to go out, because that's what the people are looking for. That go ahead.
Hey, Eric, I'm telling you that I can't wait. I mean, we have been working so hard. You know, in the last several weeks, we've passed the Equality Act. We passed the George Floyd bill. We passed the $1 trillion is about the American Rescue Act is about to be signed by the president, $0.9 trillion. That tax break that they got, we just turned it around. And
right.
We're giving it to the American people. And, you know, I mean, we passed HR1, voting rights. We got voting rights back. And I was on another program, you know, with a young brother who's a Black Panther. And, you know, with some of our folks, it don't matter what you do, they find a way to criticize it.
Right.
So, you know, I was discussing passing the voting rights bill. And he goes, yeah, well, you know, you passed it, but somebody should have been working on it, you know, sooner than this. I said, hold up. I said, we've been working on it since they took it out. But at that time, we were not the majority in the House of Representatives. We were not the majority in the Senate. Now, we are the majority. And we are the majority in the House, and we are the majority in the Senate. And, hey, guess what? We got the White House, too. So we're moving. I mean, we've passed five major bills in the last 2 weeks.
Once again, understanding the process. We should also note that in this particular rescue stimulus package that I believe that no Republicans voted for it. Is that correct? I know in the Senate that it didn't get one Republican vote. I don't know about with you guys in the House.
I don't remember what the vote is. We might have gotten a couple. you know, it wasn't a lot. So
I see. What were you were going to say, Wayne? You wanted to point out before we let the Congress.
No, there are a lot of Republican who Congress members who have constituents who are suffering, and they are paying attention to, especially to those who didn't favor this package, you know. And I just hope that when there's an opportunity to vote these people out, that they are voted out, because this is not a blue state, red state thing. This is a human thing. People are suffering out here, you know, and that's the thing. And, you know, I applaud, you know, Joe Biden that, you know, he's done a lot in 3 months' time, you know, when you juxtapose that with what's happened in the last 12 months of 2020. And I just hope it stays that way. And actually, I'd like to see him take another term if possible.
And you know, Wayne, it you know, like I was on a briefing. They're giving members White House briefings almost every week on the COVID situation.
Exactly.
And they are happy. They were happy to announce that they have another coming out this week, 325,000 vials of the COVID vaccine. 325,000 on top of what they said they would have in the beginning. So they're starting to ramp this thing up and they're going to be ahead of the deal. You're going to be able, you know, you're going to be able to walk down the street anywhere and get the vaccine in a minute. And they think that we will have the entire country vaccinated to the point where herd immunity starts. So many people with the vaccine, and they think that we'll be good in June or July.
Right.
I hope. I mean, it's amazing. It's commendable, you know.
And they keep it at this pace. I mean, they felt they needed to get up to 3 million vaccinations a day. They're at 2.7. So they're almost at 3 million. So,
right.
I mean, it's, you know.
That's amazing. That's simply,
you know,
amazing.
After a little bit more time goes by and the president does some more stuff, because now he's talking about doing an infrastructure bill that's as big as this bill. So that would be incredible.
That would bring jobs. Mm-hmm.
That would definitely bring jobs. Nothing but jobs. So,
right.
You know, I'm just waiting for for the time when I can look at these brothers that when I was saying Biden early on, and they were like, "Oh, I don't know about Joe." I'm gonna be like, "Told you." That's all I'm gonna say.
Well, I hope Ice Cube is one of them.
Goodness.
Somebody needs to sit down and really get to our young brothers. You know.
Wayne, tell me if I'm on point. And Byron, the black men that voted for Trump, it was about seeing something in him that they always wanted to be. Think of Dwayne, I got deep into this, that they look at Trump as a symbol of the man that they want to be. That got the money he needs, does whatever he wants with.
Oh, yeah.
He was definitely that dude.
Nothing, and stands there like, "That's right, that's me." And I think they just said, "Damn, I'm voting for him. That's the man I want to be like." Am I crazy?
That's exactly right. And that's why the Democrats need an individual like that. Because, I mean, you know, every once in a while.
The only reason they could have voted for him.
Yeah, that's why the brothers voted for him, because definitely that vibe, I think. Before everybody knew that it was just a facade, he wasn't really that dude. That's when everybody thought he was really the dude that built his business up and made this money and was the hardcore, rough and tumble construction guy. Even allowed for that. Like, when I was a big fan of The Apprentice. The fellows will tell you, I used to be talking about. You know, I used to watch that.
Too.
And think he was a racist, you know, and it's me like too. You were willing to accept hey, he's rough and tumble. It's New York construction. It's Donald Trump. Yeah, whatever. You know, that was the vibe.
Hey, it was fun. It was fun.
When you thought he earned it.
It was fun when he got into politics, you know?
I just remember all the, and forgive the expression, ass-whipping, if you will, that we used to take in the press from people like him, right. Your mother in particular, you know, when he would come out and say such outrageous things about the Central Park Five, Tawana
right.
Brawley, cases like that, stop and frisk. You know, these are the things that most people in the country did not get a chance to hear or was
right.
never amplified. And the recently decedent who got the Congressional Medal or the I forgot whatever they gave Limbaugh. You know,
yeah.
he was certainly one of his proponents who did that. And it's just shameful that, you know, media needs to be corrected. I say this every week. I'm ashamed of what it's gotten to. There's no fairness. There's just, you know, your side, my side, we got to figure out the truth. What's, you know, what's
right.
fake from what's
right.
real.
There, I mean, but you guys, I mean, that's when I would get reminded of who he really was. You know, when I was into The Apprentice, which was after the Central Park Five situation, my mom reminded me, yeah, right, that's the guy that, you know. And also, too, my sister's
mm-hmm.
My sister doing her entertainment stuff, doing covering red carpet events at a couple of the emerging hip-hop events, particularly one that Sean Combs had, her and her girlfriend Donald Trump stopped for their camera and talked to them for a little bit and gave him a little interview. She's since lost the interview. She can't find it. But I thought he came off kind of cool.
Good,
I was like, well, Trump stopped and talked to you guys? Okay, great. Wow, that's kind of cool. But who knew that, except for you guys, Wayne, that we're really covering the press so that this individual is really extremely despicable, just to put it
highly bigoted.
I really think
yeah.
he's a POS, but that's my thinking, you know.
Right.
Yeah, the most
if I might,
individuals. We got about 5 minutes
right,
left.
Right. I don't want to be disrespectful, Eric, but I just got to ask you, Cousin Don, one thing. You teased us 2 weeks ago about the research you've done on diabetes and neuropathy and amputations. I need to sit with you or wherever I could get the information from your office. You know, I'd like to find out more about some of the work. You know, I texted Eric about it, but I know everybody's busy, but I'm just throwing this out here. You know, I'm very
yeah, we'll
interested
get that to
in
you off air. We'll get that to you once we get off. We can get you all the information that you would need to further pursue it.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Before we jump
we
off,
need to do a show on that, on our health.
Yeah,
but listen,
yeah,
Eric, let me real quick run off the work that we've done in the House in the last
okay.
few weeks. The American
okay.
Rescue Plan, the For the People Act, H.R. 1, that was the bill to restore the voting rights and keep them from gerrymandering congressional districts. The George Floyd Injustice and Policing Act, we know what that's about. The Donald Payne Senior Colorectal Cancer Detection Act, that's a
oh,
bill that's coming.
Okay.
Something
right.
I'm working on. The Equality Act. I mean, so we've been, you know, I've been working.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I'm telling you that with this president and the Senate being Democratic, there's no excuse for us not to move an agenda that benefits the people of this country. And that's what I'm about. And it looks like that's what the president of the United States is about. So we're in good stead. If we keep him on track, then, you know, we'll be in good stead.
And, you know, people should understand, and we've got about 3 minutes left, that remember the time when John McCain, Republican, came to the Senate and blasted everybody and said, we're not getting anything done. We're not getting anything done. And he was talking about regular order, and he was talking about, there's a time to stop arguing and all that and fighting and get stuff done for the people that sent you there. And that's what people need to understand. You can be on either side, argue and argue just for the sake of arguing. But eventually you got to compromise. If it's not your idea, if it's not your original idea, you're going to have to compromise when you have other people, certainly another, when you got 365 million people in the room that you're trying to make the stew with, you're going to have to compromise. I was going to almost curse, but we got the congressman on. So you're going to have to compromise. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's how the process goes, and the way you determine who's a good representative is by the results. Well, you'll have checks in, and I guarantee the checks ain't going to be having Joe Biden's name on them. He ain't that type of dude. He's just about getting the work done. That's what champions do kind of too.
We're concerned that Republican members of the House that didn't vote for it are going to send letters out like, you know, congratulations on the check we helped you get for the American people and use us.
Of course they will. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they did. That's how they roll. We got to jump off. We could talk about Harry and Meghan another time. It's like, oh, well, what a surprise. They're racist over there. end of interview for me. You know, it could be real quick. Congressman, we want to thank you for coming on and talking to us this evening. And we're going to be talking to
thanks.
You. The next thing we want to talk about is the minimum wage. How are we going to move that? Also, too, might want to get with Craig Melvin because he did a thing about having his little brother get his colonoscopy the other day and did a nice little spot on it on the Today Show.
All right. Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, cool. So, that's cool. All right.
Thanks, Congressman Payne, for calling in and getting up. Talk to you soon.
You got to talk.
Oh, sorry. Cut you off there, Chop. You guys want to give your last shout-outs before we leave? And Byron, talk about real quick about Vera Katz, our
Vera Katz will be our special guest tomorrow, Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on this show live. She taught Bob. She talked to Mr. Bob, the Golden Globe award-winning, from Black Panther, Chadwick Boseman, and Felicia Rashad, and Taraji. Tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a great show.
Tune in tomorrow. There it is.
Wow.
All right, Brother B, we'll talk to you tomorrow, man. Tune in tomorrow, everybody, to hear this legendary acting coach. Talk to you tomorrow, brother. Wayne, you want to give the people your sign-off real quick?
Just all the best and looking forward to tomorrow.
All right.
Keep the faith.
To you tomorrow. That's the legendary news, man. He's low-key, but he's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. Talk to you tomorrow, Wayne. This has been Kay's Son and Friends. You know, I'm just following into the tradition that my mother set. And also that my father set and my uncle set and other family members set, trying to keep people informed and stay active. You know, we have the opportunities that we have, so we would be remiss if we didn't share the information, share the wealth, and share the knowledge. All right, got to go. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's Son and Friends, and you guys are you. See you tomorrow. Peace.
Don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes.